Ian Oland, it is Sunday, February 17th, as we're recording here, and I've got the playoff chances as we stand right now. You and I were both a little anxious about this a couple weeks back, but I think the situation started to congeal and crystallize a little bit. So according to MoneyPuck.com, the Washington Capitals have an 80% chance of making the playoffs as of today. According to Micah Blake McCurdy of Hockey Viz, the Caps have an 85% chance of making the playoffs as of today. And Dom, as from The Athletic, said the Caps have an 86% chance of winning the playoffs. That looks like a pretty good situation to be in, even if there's some tough road games and stretches ahead. I'm feeling pretty good about the Caps' chances here. It'd be a distinct disaster if things fell apart. Are you feeling 80 to 86% confident or less than that?
I'm feeling 45.
that's just your pessimism, right? That's just rain cloud.
No, I think it's because I think Carolina is going to get into the playoffs, and someone between the Islanders, the Capitals, and the Penguins aren't going to make the playoffs. And if the Islanders
not the Islanders. The Islanders are a lock. Is for like that East Coast wildcard spot. We're going to get into like who's what, who needs what, and who's hurt. But I'm with you. Carolina is the team that everyone needs to look out for.
Yeah, I think they're just a good young team. I think the post game celebration stuff is a great motivation. I think they just are finding themselves right now, and I just don't. The Capitals play the Carolina three times in March, which I pointed out on Twitter yesterday, and. You know, obviously, Carolina's probably not going to keep winning 8 out of 10 games, but I just don't feel great. The Capitals had a good game against San Jose mostly. I think a lot of people kind of, you know, Craig Laughlin was like, that was one of the best games of the year. It was a full 60 minutes. And I was like, I was not watching the same game as other people, because I saw the first and second period of Holtby bailing out the Caps like 10, 15 times. It's still being a little loosey-goosey, a lot of bad turnovers. San Jose just couldn't score. And then the Capitals, you know, bury a few chances, some good high dangerous chances, and then the game is pretty much over. I thought they dominated in the third period, but I don't think they're past their problems. I still think, you know, Niskanen is, I'm worried about the defense here, and I'm not sure just one or two guys at the trade deadline are really going to help. I really think that the big part of the problem is just the forwards. Are they going to be committed to defense? Are they going to come back in plays? Are they going to not make dumb passes and dumb turnovers? And I really think it's the forward core that's the most troubling part of this team.
Well, I hope for dear listeners, I hope that Ian has sufficiently peed on your parade and pulled the rain cloud over your future here. We're going to talk about the trade deadline and the playoff runs, but I think that's about as much setup as we need. Let's get into this mess. It's the Rush Machine Podcast.
Yeah. And now it's time for the RMNB Podcast.
So, Ian, we've talked about this a lot, but there's some big defensive problems with the Capitals, and I think that your introduction really articulated it well, that when we say like defensive problems, we don't necessarily mean defenseman problems. We mean problems for the whole team, keeping the puck out of their end of the ice. I did like an unpacking of that about how like rush goals are a problem. It seemed like they had made some progress on that with the San Jose game. The first goal was definitely... Well, San Jose's only goal was definitely a rush goal. But it seems like it's unavoidable that the Caps are going to have to do something at the trade deadline, which is rapidly approaching, to address these problems.
I don't necessarily think they do. I think they just need to get rid of some of the guys on the fourth line and call up some guys from Hershey. I don't think a veteran player at the deadline will hurt. Or if they want to make a move where they don't feel like they believe in Burakovsky anymore, he is inconsistent. I think he's a great young player still. He has flashes of brilliance, but like if they want someone who will give this team a spark down the stretch, I get it. But I also look at some of these things and you know, you laughed at me, but I think a guy like Liam O'Brien, I think a guy like Nathan Walker, they can step into the lineup, and I think they would do good.
You can't really put those two names together. I like, so now people are going to think I laugh at you about Nathan Walker when everyone knows that you and I are exactly equal in our love of Nathan Walker. Liam O'Brien is a lovely guy. I don't think that he brings anything to the Capitals that the Capitals need. I think the Caps have a lot. The problem is that, like, I kind of agree with you, right? Because, like, they could bring in, you know, I don't know, a depth player, but the problem isn't they're like the available players. The problem is that, like, they've got an evaluation problem on that fourth line.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how many more reps you need of Chandler Stephenson, Devontae Smith-Pelly, and Travis Boyd. And I think some of those players can be in the lineup at times, but if you run with that fourth line, you're going to get whipped and your PK is not going to be much better anyway. I think there's sort of like a conflation that happens, I guess, with Todd Reirden between players who are good at the PK being the same thing as players who do play the PK. And I'm not sure that I, you know, agree with that at all.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. And you know what? Their evaluation of Travis Boyd drives me insane because Boyd is very talented offensively. I have been really impressed by how he can kind of make something out of nothing, and he's really good stick handling and a great passer, and he's a pretty good forechecker too when he needs to be. He is just a god-awful defensive player, and he is slow. And so, like, you look at somebody like Boyd, there's so much evidence that he's causing the team problems, yet because he has those dashboard points, we're going to keep that guy in the lineup. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, when I was running through like those like rush goals that there've been a ton of since the Caps got back from the All-Star game break, that fourth line wasn't out there for those goals. So like, I think like there's something different happening. And I know that wasn't what you were saying, but like, I think there's something different happened between like the way the top nine is playing risky hockey, really even the top six. I don't think the other line's doing a ton of bad work on that point. At least not recently. There's something different about the way like the top six is playing, like overcommitting on the forecheck and then not putting any pressure on the blue line versus the way the fourth line plays, which is that they just don't get out of their damn zone ever.
Yeah.
Like they don't get into the offensive zone. And I don't know what, you know, can be done there. Can I ask you for your take on something that I've written about, but I haven't heard you chime in specifically on?
Sure, sure.
Marcus Johansson to the Caps. What do you think?
I don't know. I feel like he's cursed.
Have you seen him? Yes, he has been. I mean, he played like I think the number was like, you know, in two seasons of hockey, he had up until recently played just 69 games for the Devils.
This is going to be an absurd pull, but he reminds me of Glenn Davis. Remember when the Orioles got Glenn Davis from like Pete Harnish, Kurt Schilling, and some other guy, and they all went in to be stars and weird right wing Republicans. I don't know. I love the idea of it 2 years ago. You know what I mean? Like the Marcus Johansson of 2 years ago. Oh yeah, I'm down. But I just worry he's not the same player and something's going on with him.
He's got crazy points in like the last like 2 weeks. I don't know if that means anything at all, but I also don't think you don't need him to score. You just need him to do everything outside of scoring. Like he's the neutral zone guy. He would if you put him together with Oshie and Kuznetsov, I would love that line forever. I mean, that's as close as you can get to the Justin Williams line from 3 years ago.
And didn't he PK in his last year?
Yeah, some. He had been up and down. But like, yeah, I like Johansson on a PK, too.
On this team, he'd become one of our best ones.
Yes. And he when he played on the power play, you know, like the thing that, you know, people always say, like, you know, Johansson's soft. He's a turnover machine. All the stuff that they say about Burakovsky now.
Yeah.
And like, you know, the most lazy ass analysis, the most glib way of talking about hockey, Ken. They used to say about Johansson. But if you looked at the way Johansson played on the power play for the Caps, you know, 3 years ago, he was the low dude. He was in the roughest spot on the ice. He got his ass kicked, and he still did great there. He used to do that really fast move.
Yeah.
He used to hang on the goal line, get the pass, and then make that, like, lateral stride, like, right to the net. That was a great move for the team. I like the Johansson idea. I have a feeling that, like, if they really wanted to do something to, like, change the team, I have the suspicion, and I don't have anybody that will, like say anything outright about it, but I have the suspicion that the Caps are entertaining something bigger. Maybe like top four defense. I don't know if they're, you know, how worried they are about Niskanen, but you rightly called out that Niskanen is a huge problem. He's not playing the way he did two seasons ago or even last season, the playoffs, when I thought he was marvelous. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Caps are a little bit splashier than people think. There's not a ton of options out there, especially on defense at the trade deadline. And, there aren't also a ton of obvious sellers either. That said, there's a handful of like really big moves, mostly, you know, there's stuff in goal. There's some big forwards that are on the move. Duchesne, Stone, maybe Panarin, probably not though. I don't know. It's a really big time, and I don't know what McClellan's thinking, but I have a feeling he's thinking a lot. And I'd be very surprised if they stand pat altogether, and I would be only somewhat surprised if they do something gigantic here, something like earth shattering, like on the level of like, you know, getting Oshie like they did way back.
Yeah, it's been. I could see that happening too. I guess we'll see how it all pans out. The sad part is that there are specific people in the organization where I'd be like, well, I think he might work right now on this team. You know, I think Siegenthaler could be a third pairing guy. I actually think this is going to sound really stupid, but I think one of their answers on defense could actually be Alex Alexiev, but I don't think he can play this year because he's been down in I don't know the rules with Junior, and they would never do that anyways, but he's been unbelievable for Red Deer, and he's a great player. He's going to be on the team next year. I
don't know anything about Alex Squared, but I do like what I saw from Siegenthaler. He had a couple goof ups. I think he was like probably like the worst at defending the blue line in the last couple of weeks, which doesn't mean anything overall. I think like the larger pattern of his statistics have been really, really impressive.
Mm-hmm.
That said, it's been great to see Juice back. It just is a shame that, like, you know, that pushes out our boy Siegs. I think he's got a bright future, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's top four bound before too long.
Yeah, I wouldn't. And I also wouldn't be surprised if after the regular season kind of sums up that Orpik may find the bench.
You like, really think so?
I think I wouldn't be surprised.
I would be so surprised.
He's been, you know. He actually really started off, I thought, pretty strong. I do think a lot of that has to do with Christian Juice, but I thought he played really well. And I think that injury midway through the year with, I think it was his knee, I think it really robbed him of what he had. I think he trained really well going into the season. It's crazy that I thought he looked maybe the best that he has looked as a Capital in the first quarter part of that season. And then he had that injury, and it just, he doesn't look the same to me, you know.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I liked the way he looked at stretches of the season, and I don't like putting any blame on him or anything like that. Like, I think he's done as well as he had in the context that he's in and a team that's having a harder time keeping the puck out of their own end. I think he's been kind of all right, and I wouldn't rank him as a problem anywhere close to where I rank like Niskanen or Kuznetsov defensively. That 3-on-1 play from a couple weeks back a bad line change made it like a, you know, 3-on-1 against Orpik. Orpik played that play fine. It ended up in the back of the net, but that's just the way it goes when it's a 3-on-1. And also like on a team that is having so much trouble being like too aggressive, like they're making too many high risk plays, Orpik doesn't do that. So he doesn't get caught out of position because he's making bad choices. He only gets caught up in position if like, you know, the puck's moving too darn fast for him. And that's just, you know, the way time works. It just goes in that one direction towards getting old.
I will say, I think he's almost gotten better over the term of the contract, which is really confusing to me.
That Schmidt year was so special.
Yeah,
like,
it was.
For a player, and I guess he was like 35, 36 at the time, to kick that much ass, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
Your last season was pretty rough, but I think he's done a lot better this season. And he's been playing with Bowie less and Juice more. And I think that does a lot to help him out. Can I run through, you know, like when you said, what did you say, like 45% chance of making the playoffs?
I really feel like that's more realistic. Yeah.
Okay. I think you're totally bonkers, but let's run through our remaining stretch. Right. So this six game road trip is a tough one, but some of these teams have kind of given up. Right. So we've got Anaheim and the Kings. Both are, you know, they're essentially surrendered on the season. Then Toronto and Buffalo, those are two really, you know, basically the opposite of Anaheim and LA. Those are fast teams, young teams. They can score. Buffalo doesn't have any depth, but they're pretty scary up top. And then the Caps come back home for two games, which should be two easy wins. That's against the Rangers in Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
That takes us all the way up to like the deadline. Then we've got a road trip that should be okay. Again, I think they got the Islanders, which should be a good test to see what like the post deadline Caps look like against the post deadline Islanders. And then games against the Rangers and Philly, both of whom who have probably given up. And by that point, I would suspect that Simmons will be gone from Philly. Back at home to host the Devils, who have had a huge setback this season. I don't know what the hell got into them. I talked about it on the Pucker Up podcast. It just seems like they don't have any. If you don't have Taylor Hall in the lineup, and even when you do have Taylor Hall in the lineup, when he gets on the bench, you suck. The Jets, who are having trouble this season, but they're still a very, very good team. Back on the road for Pittsburgh and Philly, Tampa Bay and New Jersey. I think that three of those games are eminently winnable. The Tampa Bay one, I think, is like a zero rest game. Then the Caps come back home again to play Tampa again. That one's going to be pretty darn tough. Minnesota, it's kind of hard to see what's going on with Minnesota. They've had some injury issues. I'm not sure what they're going to be doing at the deadline. Then another game against Philly, who, you know, I guess you have an X factor about whether or not like Carter Hart's going to be in net. But I feel like any game against Philly at the end of the season is going to kind of be a win. And then, like you mentioned, we've got games against Carolina, one at home and then one on the road. Carolina, I should mention, may be the most offensively potent team in the NHL in the last decade. The numbers they're putting up on offense, and then like obviously they weren't scoring for much of the season. Once they got Nino in there, there's something really special happening in Carolina, and I don't think nearly enough people are paying attention to it. I think a lot of people are paying attention to Justin Williams being a fun party guy, and rightly so. But Carolina is a really, really special team right now. They are very fast. They're very aggressive. Their forechecks were a lot of fun. Then again, Tampa, that's going to be difficult. And then you close out the season with a game against Florida on the road. Florida gave up probably in January. Montreal, who at that point will may or may not be fighting for their survival in the last game of the season, is at home against the Islanders. Depending on what the lineup looks like, that could be the first round playoff matchup as well. I think as of right now, the Caps will go against the Blue Jackets, as of like the standings were as of this morning, which is very interesting to me to see the Jackets again. Plus, no one knows what the hell the Jackets are doing heading into the playoffs. Anyway, my position is that because some of those West Coast teams have gotten weaker, because Philly will be giving up, you know, those games against Carolina and Tampa are going to be really, really tough. But I feel like, I mean, Philly, Florida, New York Rangers, those are all winnable games now. Unless the Caps are tired or totally screw up, I feel like the Caps should be able to sail into it. And then the wild card on the East Coast battle will be between Montreal, Carolina, and surprise, surprise, the Pittsburgh Penguins. I have no idea what the hell got into the Penguins this year.
I kind of look at it differently as that if they can't put together good hockey, if they don't fix some of these defensive things, it doesn't really matter who they're playing. I think a lot of teams have been getting up for them big time because, you know, the Capitals won the Stanley Cup last year. This is a great measuring stick for teams. The Capitals have had trouble with Montreal all year. They really have struggled with their speed. The three Tampa games, the three Carolina games, you know, like you said, I think it's going to be a lot tougher than maybe you put out there, but I hope it isn't. You know, I hope they find, you know, I hope they find their mojo and Marcus Johansson. but I hope they find their mojo during the West Coast trip here, and they just play better hockey, because I think they can beat anyone when they're playing their best hockey. But it's been a struggle the last 2 months. It's been bad, and so I'm not going to look at a schedule a month ahead of time and be like, well, those are easy wins, you know, because with this team,
you're not going to do what literally I just did.
I know, but with the last 2 months, it's just none of the games have been easy.
Yeah, that's totally true.
And again, the full 60 that Craig Laughlin said of the San Jose game, I think that was like 35 minutes. You know, I think that was a full 35. So I still think there's a lot of room to grow. But, you know, Alan May was great when he kind of broke down the game afterwards, where he was showing where the forwards were collapsing. There was four or five guys in the zone. You know, the forwards weren't hanging out at the blue line looking to break out, or there weren't these rushes where they were way behind the play. So it seemed like it was a much more controlled, intelligent, thoughtful game, a more controlled game. And when they do that, I just think there's really no one that can beat them when they play that type of hockey, but they just got away from it. You know,
let me ask you a tactics question. Do you think the Caps should play the trap down the stretch and into the playoffs.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
They're not a good enough defensive team to open it up, which is weird.
Or maybe the way they're being offensive is just too, they telegraph everything.
Yeah.
Like, I can tell by the time they leave the blue zone, but by the time they exit the defensive zone, if they're going to do a slingshot pass at the opposing blue line. And if I can tell that from my couch with, like, one eye on, like, the score sheet, then I'm damn sure that, defenseman for, I don't know, Vancouver can tell the same. So
we watch every game, but if we compare ourselves to hockey players, we are hockey stupid. So
yes.
So if we see something coming, that should say something for the players. I know the slingshot pass. I want to throw my TV out the window.
I want to slingshot the slingshot pass into the sun. All right. So deadline's coming up. We got Devils, Kings, Ducks, Wings, probably the Hawks, probably the Canucks doing some selling. I think people expect, the Senators to sell. I don't think they will, because I think I forget. Like, maybe it was like Travis. Well, the Senators have Duchesne and Stone, so there's a lot of good, offense there. I think they want to trade Duchesne. I think Bob McKenzie's report this morning was like they want to trade Duchesne and sign Stone. We'll see about that. If I were them, I would get rid of everybody. But I would start by getting rid of the owner. So I don't know who I am in that hypothetical. The Jackets are such a weird situation. We've talked about this on the podcast before, but they got Panarin. They've got Bobrovsky. Bobrovsky's not having a good season. But
though
both
he did
those players,
shut out the Caps a week ago.
Well, who can't? Everyone can shut out the Caps. What do they do? I really don't know. I think that Yarmo goes for it and keeps those guys, but I could also see them making like a player for player goalie trade or something like that. Like I said earlier, like San Jose cannot go into the playoffs with Martin Jones. They need to do something to improve on the goal line. Cause I think that people are underrating San Jose purely because they can't get the puck out of their net. Whereas I think that they're not too much far behind Tampa. And I feel like, if it were like a meritocracy in the playoffs and not somewhat random, we would see, San Jose versus Tampa in the final. I think that'd be an excellent series. But they won't be able to do it right now. Nashville, I think, needs some help. They are a little bit too one-dimensional. Their player play is garbage. The Penguins are, I'm surprised Rutherford hasn't made bigger moves. I'm surprised, Jack Johnson's still getting zone. I guess they just don't have any defense. Like, Mata's a huge problem. Like, Mata can't do anything in transition. I just don't think that player panned out. I think there's like rose-colored glasses got in the way there. Jack Johnson, mellow folk rock tunes from Hawaii, just not good, not appropriate for hockey. Yeah, and then the Oilers. Who knows? The Oilers are. Do they just trade Cam Talbot? Who knows what that's going on there? It's gonna be crazy at the deadline. My guess is that the Caps are aggressive and do something that no one sees coming, except for that we see that they're gonna do something that we don't see coming.
You know what? I know what it's gonna be.
Hit me.
Andre Burakovsky for Alex Chiasson.
Oh, God. Oh, I would despair. Has Chiasson done... what has Chiasson done since, Thanksgiving? Has he scored at all?
We should look.
All right, I'm on it. Ready? Chiasson.
I bet, one goal in the last month.
All righty, I've got his game log here for 2018-19. Thank you, hockeyreference.com. So, start off the season with 3 goals in 3 games. All right, looking back at it, he is without a goal since January 8.
Oh, wow. I was right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he's had, 4 assists in that time? So, I wonder what, his season shooting percentage is now. Let's see here. Season level shooting percentage.
Is it under 15%
yet? Nope, it's still above 20. So, I mean, he was like 40% for a minute there. Anyway,
No. He was at 50% for a while there.
Flip a coin. Did Chiasson score or not? Yeah. I was really happy for him. He had a great start. But the Oilers just do the same Lucy and the football stuff every season. They're like, yeah, no, we've got something going here. And they know, I don't know. This is what happens when you've got, Coy and Vance Gretzky running your team. They have no
I don't even understand it, to be honest, because they have so many good players.
They're gonna get rid of that Finnish kid.
I can't say his
Puljujärvi.
Name. Yeah,
I don't know. I'm so bad at this.
Try it.
Well, no, because I don't want to be wrong.
That's why you should try it.
Jesse Puljujarvi. And he is Finnish. That's good. And when the name's confusing, I assume that the person is Finnish. I guess that, like, this could be like the next player they give up on. Like, there's like a real chance that the Oilers could, God damn it, win the lottery again. God. At which point, like, if you were 30 other teams in this league, wouldn't you just be so furious? And if you're a talented young player, and like you see that like the Oilers got Connor McDavid, you're like, oh, thank God, I'm probably not going to have to go that team then. Like, if I get picked first, someone else will get it. I mean, what a tough bag. Yep. Let's see here. So we ran through who needs what. We ran through the playoffs. So I have a bunch of questions here from Twitter. If you'd like to field some.
Oh yeah. Let's do it.
All righty. This is an easy one. From Regal Beagle, if not the Caps, who would you want to see win it all this year? Ian?
Oh, I would say Carolina.
Carolina.
I would love to see Carolina do it. I am on the Justin Williams bandwagon, and I think Don Cherry's head would literally explode in the finals.
Yes, I totally agree. Elise just says, what is the point? That was her question.
Just of life, of our blog?
I don't think there is one. 42. 42 is the point. Michael Rechelet, this is a good one. Who would do better, the Washington Capitals playing Overwatch or the Washington Justice playing hockey?
I would say the Washington Capitals playing Overwatch.
You're absolutely right. Also, I'm not sure if the Washington Capitals couldn't beat the Washington Justice at Overwatch. The Washington Justice did not look great in their opening game. Let's do. Okay, everybody, welcome to Peter's Esports Corner, the podcast within a podcast where Peter talks about esports. The Washington Justice are an expansion team in the Overwatch League, which has just entered its second season. The Washington Justice played against the New York Excelsior, who was easily the best team in the league last season, for at least the entirety of the regular season, and were mostly wiped off the map. They won one map, though. It seems like it might have been a fluke, because Libero's Farah ult seems to have exploded into the tire swing at the first point of Horizon Lunar Colony. And that seems to have prevented the Nixil from getting their attack in. So Washington got an improbable full hold against Excelsior and then ended up winning that map, but got just blown away on every single other map. It seems like there's some support problems, maybe some communication between the support players and the main tank for Justice. And that could be a problem. I really like Corey. I really like Fozix. I think there's some good, interesting stuff happening in Justice, but it could come down to coaching and it could come down to talent. There was rumors that they didn't spend as much as they wanted to. The management staff for Justice seems like a really bright crew. I like their attitude a lot, but I don't think they were able to pull the moves that they wanted to pull and get the talent that they needed to do. And if they can't get communication effective between the tank line and the support line, it's going to be a brutal season for Justice until they play the Shanghai Dragons, which may be the only winnable game for them this season. Maybe Florida Mayhem. We'll see how Mayhem's progressed. What do you think about that, Ian?
I think no one's listening to podcasts anymore.
I did as fast as I could. We've now exited Peter's Esports Corner, and we've got a...
You know what? No, we have Ted Leonsis is still listening, and Ted, hey, thank you for still listening.
Yeah, thanks, Ted. I think this is Gene Wu. I think this is Gene's account here. Is he Evgeny Wu's Netsoff now?
Yes.
Okay. He says, why so many penalties? Ian, why so many penalties?
You know, I think a lot of it was just because, A, they're just not good defensively. Like, it's like this team has to be, like, lashed inside the locker room and, like, have chairs thrown at them to really just pay attention to their assignments and get back. But, you know, I think it's that. I think towards the end of the first half of the season before their bye, I think they were just tired. And when you get tired, you start using your stick. You start playing defense with your stick instead of your legs. You know, you don't play the body. You just kind of reach and try to hook and hold. And that's just what happens. And I think, you know, a lot of times too, it's also a symptom of a bigger thing, which is usually not very good. Like, you know, either the system is not working that well, or your defense is overwhelmed, and obviously we've pointed that out. So I think it's a number of things, but you know, I hope that's one of the biggest problems of the team moving forward.
I think you're absolutely right. And I one thing that comes up a lot is And for people that are skeptical of like shot attempt based, you know, metrics for understanding hockey, you can't commit a penalty, like a restraining penalty, if you have the puck. Simply put, right? So
yeah,
you can't hook a dude if you're carrying the puck. You can't slash dude if you're carrying the puck, so on and so forth. Question from Jen Rubenstein, who says, oh, I get what she's getting at here. Ready? Let me see if I can do the tone right. Why should professional athletes appear to gain any enjoyment from playing an extremely serious, important business sport? Why should hockey be for everyone when it can just be for straight white boys? And in not sarcasm fun, when can we have a party? I want a party. Okay, so the first question is the Hurricanes thing, which I think if we were just getting into hockey right now, we would absolutely be the Carolina blog. Like the team that has the most fun is the best team, even if they're not winning the most games, which lately Carolina is also. So we're entirely, like we said before, we're on the Carolina train here. Lots of problems with the why should hockey be for everyone when it can just be for straight white boys? That was a sarcasm point. The last one's, when can we have a party? We need to figure out the party thing. That's something we'll need to get on. Let's get through the trade deadline, then we'll figure out we're going to do a party. Jen, we will do better on that front here. Oh, everyone's asking about the Canes. Sarah says, why didn't Justin Williams ever lead the Caps in fun post-game celebrations? I'll say that Justin Williams was very fun when he was on the Capitals. Remember Picture Day? That was huge.
You know, I think part of that was just the influence of the Capitals on him, too, to be honest. And I think the Capitals are not that fun, to be honest.
Like, Some of them are. No one's more fun than Evgeny Kuznetsov.
No. They have fun players. I don't think the team is fun. I think the team really struggles with fun.
Yeah. Kevin says, who's one player that you'd want the Caps to make a trade for? You said Chiasson. You're not joking. And I said Johansson, and I was also not joking. Do you have another player that you'd like to see the Caps pick up?
To be honest, no. Maybe a defenseman. I don't know who that defenseman is. I don't know who's completely available. I like the Kempney route they went last year. I mean, that's perfect. But I also like the Jakub Jarabek angle last year, too. I thought both players played pretty well.
And I like having them compete down the stretch. That was a great idea.
Yeah, and I mean, you didn't have to give up much, a third or fourth round pick, for those guys. So I think that really worked out well. I would love to see another no-namer that McClellan sees value on. I think those are the types of guys where they don't have much ego. They're just looking to prove themselves, and I think they're going to get welcomed with warm arms in the locker room. And you know, but I think a lot of things that they have going on with this team, some of it is coaching, some of it is commitment from the players. I think they have certain guys in Hershey and in the organization that could help out with some of these issues. It'll be interesting to see what they do, but I think really the Caps just need to get their butts in gear, you know.
Zach says, and I think, let's see if you can guess what my answer is to this one. I think you and I talked about this one a lot. Zach says, why can't the Caps be consistent?
Oh, no. Do you want me to answer that?
Yes.
Well, wouldn't the statistician's point of view say that they are consistent?
They are extremely consistent to giving up odd man rushes against. Zach, we want them to be less consistent or consistent at something else instead of being consistent at defensive problems.
Well, it's like the try harder thing.
What does that mean?
You know what I mean? Like, I remember people used to say, well, the team needs to try harder and they'll win. But the assumption is that everyone is trying hard 100%.
Yes.
So there's nothing to glean from that. But anyways.
Tiggy, this is a hard name to say. Tiggy. All right. I'm not going to say that one again. Ask this question. Does Ovi become the true great one if he passes Gretzky's goal record? I would like to field this one if I could.
Sure.
Gretzky's goal record shouldn't be like the milestone to judge whether Ovi is, you know, the true great one. I think that Gretzky fits in a niche that will always be Gretzky's. He played in a different era when the game played in a different style. Ovechkin is a completely unique player inside the NHL. No one is like Ovi. Last year, people said that Patrick Laine is the next Ovi. Look at Patrick Laine now. It is very, very clear that he is not the next Ovi. There's only one Ovi. It's Ovi. There was a time when people said that Milan Lucic was almost as good as Ovi. Like, let's get real. And I'm not saying that there aren't other players, but I'm saying there's different ways to be great. There's different ways to be spectacular. And it's cool to, like, you know, compare who's the greatest of all time. Dominik Hasek's the best goalie of all time. That's a no-brainer. But when it comes to, like, these, like, forwards, like, I don't know, Gretzky and Lemieux and Ovi and Crosby, they're all up there, and they're all up there in different ways. They're all special in different ways, and you'll see it reflected in their stats. And I just think, like, we shouldn't just boil it down to who had the most goals, especially because the goals that got scored in that era are totally different than the goals that got scored in this one. So it's, you know, it's a different animal.
Question for you. Do you think adjusted goals should be the thing he's measured by?
No, I like it. It's kind of like adjusted goals are, I don't think we should do that kind of comparison. Like, I think we should just judge him to say, like, in the time he was playing, he was amazing, and that's all we need to do. Like, we shouldn't try and boil it down to a single stat, in my opinion. I mean, and then maybe that's fine for, like, player evaluation inside this moment, but across eras, like, if we were to do, like, when a wins above replacement for Gretzky versus wins above replacement for Ovi, I feel like that would, I don't know, it would do a disservice to appreciation of the player to try and simplify it that much to me. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know, when you get down to it, like, all these stats are just about, like, settling, like, you know, arguments at a bar stool. And that's, I don't know, that's cool. I just don't want it to take away from Gretzky, who meant the world to me as a kid, and, you know, Ovechkin, who means the world to me now. And they're both amazing and special, and that's forever.
I do have a question for you, though. Does Ovi have more adjusted goals than Gretzky right now?
No, I don't think so.
I think if he doesn't, it's very close.
All right, I'll pull up Hockey Reference. Adjusted goals. All right, here we go. Number one is not Gretzky.
Nope.
It is Gordie Howe with 925. Holy shiza. Then Jágr in second with 841. Then Gretzky in third with 758. Ovi is just below him at 742.
Yeah, so Gretzky there is. And I actually think that feels right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Gordie Howe's longevity was amazing, and that's you know, Gretzky also wasn't that special in his, like, 30s. I remember we always, like, used to pull out that stat that, like, Mike Knuble outscored Gretzky in his 30s.
But he became more of, like, a second or third line center, and he was just a playmaker. Like, Gretzky went from the greatest thing ever to, like, Nicholas Backstrom at the tail end of his career, which is crazy.
And there will never ever be somebody that dominated a game as much as you know, Gretzky did when he was doing, you know, 50 and 50 all the time.
You know, and you're how you can't really compare Gretzky and Ovechkin. I think that's one way, is that Ovechkin, no matter how great he's been, he will never been able to dominate the league like Gretzky did.
Yeah.
No one will.
Question from Nico. Why haven't the Caps retired Olli Kolzig's number?
I think, you know, that's actually a great question. And I think right now you're seeing why, is that, you know, Kolzig had an unbelievable career, but a lot of his stats, when compared with Braden Holtby at the end of his career, you know, Holtby will likely be a better player if he stays in Washington. So I think Ted, when he was explaining why he hadn't done that for Bondra and Kolzig, now no one has worn their number since,
right?
So clearly it's thought about very highly, but I think when Ted has talked about it before, he said that, you know, I want time to be that judge. I don't want to do it for an emotional reason, you know. And I also think part of it is too, I think Ted wants people to work for the organization after the career's over. Like, I think it's a good kind of carrot to dangle to some of these players. Like, look at Bondra now. You know, he's working for the organization. He's doing business for the organization all the time.
Look at Langway. You can't get rid of Langway.
Langway's everywhere. Right. He held the door for me when I went to the game.
He was
Rod Langway.
He was he was sanitizing people's hands in the bathroom, collecting tips at the game I was at in December.
Yeah, so like I like it, but then I don't, because I think Bondra is one of the greatest players ever for the Capitals. I don't think that, you know. And I think Ollie's a more difficult one, because he a lot of his stats came at the tail end of his career. He wasn't a great player for a really long time. He was a great player towards the end of his career, in the middle of his career. I think he didn't become a starter until he was like 30, when they got Bill Ranford, and he kind of wrestled the starting position away from Bill Ranford, and he wasn't supposed to start that year. So, you know, I don't know if they'll ever retire his number, but I think Banzai will at some point.
I agree.
I think you have to do Banzai.
And I think Ted, and this is probably 4 years old now, but I think at some point Ted said, we're not going to retire any numbers until we win a championship. Like, we want to focus on the big things before we start, you know, celebrating the past, which seems fine.
You know what? What becomes difficult is then think about this next generation of players. You have Mike Green. You have Nicholas Backstrom. You have Alex Ovechkin. You have Braden Holtby. You have Bondra. You have Kolzik. You have, you know, five or six guys that for some teams, they would retire their numbers, you know?
There's only three names in there that you retire.
Who do you think?
Ovi, Nicky Holtby, the end of list.
Really?
Yeah.
Like you don't do Bondra or anyone else?
No.
Wow.
I mean, maybe Bondra, not Kolzik. That's my. But I'm a jerk. I'm the crank. You peed on the parade about the playoffs at the beginning of it. I'm peeing on the.
No, I don't think you are. I don't think you are. I will give Ted. I didn't like it at first when he said, you know, I want to wait on this decision. But yeah. I think 10 years later, you look, it's a very different landscape.
This question's from Thomas. He says, who would win in a fight between RoboCop and Inspector Gadget? Did we do this? Was this like a topic of the fight?
Yeah, it was. I'm RoboCop all the way.
Yes. God. Penny's the only dangerous. We talked about this. You can't do bits from previous episodes of the podcast. Oh, here's a nice one from Jude. Jude, really good attitude with this one.
Hey, Jude.
He's about to make it bad. Why tweet about esports from the Rush Machine account? Bite me, Jude.
No, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that, because what did I say in Slack?
It's not going well.
But I said, I also said, I love you and I believe in you.
It was, I want to say that the feedback was 50-50, and the people that were very vocal about disliking it seemed to be doing it as a bit.
I agree with you on that. I do agree with you on that.
Okay. All right. It was a one-time thing, by the way. We're not going to do it all the time. I promise.
I want to say this, though, is that I think that's why you're brilliant. I hated saying something because I noticed it wasn't doing well, but I also, you know, like things that we did in the beginning that were visionary didn't go well then either. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. We had some misses.
Yeah, we had some misses, but they ended up being total successes. So when I said it's not going well, it didn't mean that I didn't think it was a great idea. And some of the reasons why you shared on Slack, I agreed with, and I thought it was great. So
good. It was an act of goodwill towards a new team.
Yeah.
So to Peter, Jude, take a walk, Jude.
Nah. Okay, sorry.
I don't think we've got any more good questions here. A lot of the questions, like, people asked, but we already sort of discussed, like, about, like, the slingshot pass and who the gaps should target. Some people are just saying mean things, more mean comments about esports, so that's interesting. Can Barry Trotz turn any Metro team into a top seed? Discuss.
Oh, that's a good one.
Is it?
To us, no. But
what did Barry Trotz do with the Islanders? What did he do?
I think they were already a fast team. And in the NHL, you can win with a fast team. I think he brought his system there. And I'm not talking about, like, you know, the family, you know, close nature team atmosphere thing. I think he brought kind of his trapping system there, and it works with a fast team. And they're getting great goaltending, and they're getting a lot of bounces. I don't necessarily think that they're good. I still don't think they're good.
Yeah, I don't know either. I think they're getting amazing goaltending, and they've got a pretty a bunch of defenders that are turning out okay.
You know what? Another part of it, which I discount, and I shouldn't discount, Mitch Korn. I didn't even think about that. We keep saying they're getting great goaltending. Why are they getting great goaltending?
Here's the thing, some
of it might be a mirage.
Yeah,
but some of it might actually be Mitch Korn too, I think.
But Holtby last season had Mitch Korn.
Well, what did Holtby do though the season after he first got Mitch Korn?
Won the Vezina.
He won the Vezina. So I'm just saying, I think Mitch Korn is a visionary. I do think that of the Hall of Fame coaches between Barry Trotz and Mitch Korn, I think Mitch Korn is a Hall of Famer.
I mean, yes, he's had, in the last 20 years of hockey, he's coached three world-class goalies, right? Like,
and Hasek. He's made them, and he's helped make them good.
Yes.
Like, yeah. Like they were good goalies, but he made them great. I really do think so.
I agree too. I think, and I also, he's hilarious and I like his style and he's, I don't know. I Mitch Korn hangs the stars. We've gotten to the bottom of our questions. We've also talked. Thank you for your patience in letting me rattle on about esports for a minute there. Do you have any closing thoughts or else we really need to get our afternoon naps in because we got some late games coming up this week?
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true.
It's going to get weird tonight. I guess the only people this, so we're recording this on Sunday. So the only people that are going to hear this today are the patrons. Thank you, patrons. But it's going to get weird. Next couple games are late games. RMNB after dark.
I always look forward to the late games because it's actually at a good time for me. I can actually spend time with
that's
Ethan.
True. Yeah, you're
can you
tell our listeners about your sleep schedule?
Oh, sure, absolutely. I have no shame in it. Maybe I should. So I work from home, so I usually work from like 9:30 to about 6. Then I usually work on RMNB and have family time with Ethan until like 8 or 9. And then I work until about 2 or 3 or 4 in the morning. And then I do it all over again. So I get about, so when Ethan doesn't sleep, like last night, I got an hour and a half of sleep. This morning I played hockey at 9. So yeah, I got an hour. I got like 90 minutes of sleep last night and this is my weekend to sleep in, you know? So
I don't know how you do it, man.
I don't know either. I mean, I actually think I'd be skinny and handsome if I didn't have the blog. But I love everybody so much, you know, I'll just be ugly. So
I was
fine.
In bed at 10 o'clock last night and I woke up at 9 this morning and I felt like I was one of those Roman emperors. I was like Caligula. It was just like it was so luxurious. Although, you know, I say that. So Freddie, the cat. Eileen's cat, yeah. who I love but doesn't seem to reciprocate those feelings, didn't let me sleep in my spot.
Oh no.
So I slept at the foot of the bed like the dog for 2 hours until I guess like Eileen woke up and she's like, oh, that's pathetic. And then she's like, she moves the cat and I'm like, thank you, sweetheart. Yeah, so sleep's a big part of my life now. I get a good night's sleep. As of like 3 or 4 years ago, I changed my stuff. That said, I'm miserable, so don't get me wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I got thoroughly messed up in high school when my mom got sick. And like when I saw her on not to get too heavy, but like when, so my mom had a blood clot in her stomach and she lost about, I think it was like 80 or 90% of her, I think it was her small or large intestine. I forget at this point. But she was on a respirator. And when you go down and see your mom on a respirator and the doctor's like, oh, she only has 10% of a chance to live the second surgery to reconnect her living, colon. I've always been like a motivated person, but like, I think that kind of lit that fire on me where I'm just, you know, I have goals and I have things I want to accomplish. And I know that if I don't work hard, you know, the site won't be as good. And so it's just a part of my life. I do it. I don't know how I do it. You know, if the blog ever stops, I'll probably look back at this time and be like, I don't know how I did that for so long, but I do it and it's fun. And I think it's the best thing I've ever done in my life. And it'll be the best thing I ever do in my life. And it's an honor to do it. So I just try to, it's kind of like, you know, Ovi did this interview over the weekend with, I think his name is Igor Rabiner of Sport Express. And one of the questions was that, you know, Ovi, how long are you going to play? Like, are you going to play until you catch Gretzky's record? Like, if you're 40 and you're close, are you going to keep playing? And Ovi was like, no, if I think I'm deceiving the hockey, that's how he put it. If I feel like I'm lying to hockey and I'm just not good enough, I'm not going to keep playing. And I think for me, it's just every day I think about what do I have to do to be good enough to be still in the space. And for me, it's a lot of work, you know, and it's getting better every day. So I just work all the time. I'm crazy.
And that was beautiful and well put. And I thank you for sharing it. And I think that's sure. Also a good place for us to leave off on. So listeners, thank you for joining us on the Russian Machine podcast. Let's get that bread.
This has been Russian Machine Never Breaks, the podcast. But now it's over. Nothing to see here. Move along.